Hello, I'm Luke Jones. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. And this time, we're hearing conversations with people living in Lebanon and northern Israel. The escalating conflict between Hezbollah in Lebanon and Israel is being described as one of the most intense of recent times. In our conversations, doctors in Beirut describe their experiences of treating the injured. Three women in northern Israel discuss how they try to remain resilient, and we hear from people living in southern Lebanon.
It's our land. It's where we grew up. It's a dignity at the end of the day. It's our dignity to protect. We're not going to flee.
As you'll hear, people in this part of the Middle East are very familiar with living with the impact of war. This current fighting has been taking place since October last year with the start of the conflict in Gaza. Israel's enemy there is Hamas. Hezbollah is an Iranian-backed political party and armed group, which is regarded as a terrorist organisation by many Western states, Israel and Gulf Arab states. They support Hamas and in solidarity with them have been firing rockets over the border into Israel. Israeli forces have been retaliating with airstrikes, tank and artillery fire. The level of global concern has with this increased massively in the past couple of weeks. 39 people were killed and thousands of others were injured when their pagers and walkie-talkies exploded. These low-tech devices were used by members of Hezbollah. Israel was accused of being responsible for exploding them, although have said nothing in response. This is where our conversations start. My colleague Andrew Peach brought together two doctors in Beirut. Dr. Tufik Elisaber is a general surgeon at the St. Joseph Hospital, and Dr. Rania Warwick is an ophthalmologist who works at the St. George Hospital. Just to say, as you might anticipate, this conversation does contain details of medical procedures.
For me, it was really emotionally devastating to see such a huge number of people losing both eyes. It is really affecting me as a person and as an ophthalmologist, because sight is one of the most important senses that we have.
As a person, it was difficult because after all, we are all human and we are seeing a kind of massacre in front of our eyes. It's difficult to tell someone you will never see again, or to tell someone you will never have, you will not be able to use your hands again, or to tell a parent that your young man has an injury which he will carry throughout his life.
In this country, we are used to crisis, we are used to disaster, and we adapt to all the situation. And this is unfortunate for us. And maybe on the other side, people are fortunate that they have a medical team who are used to continuous crisis and disaster in this country.
And part of this is about the age of the patients.
Most of them were young men between 20 to 35 years. It's the working class of the system that was massacred.
True. I agree with Dr. Sabir. It is a young population. The youngest one I had in the hospital was 18 years old, and the eldest one was 35 maybe. It's really devastating what we saw in the past 3 days.
And I guess the sort of specifics of the injuries that you've been treating are presumably because we're talking about communication devices of different sorts, and they are basically either in your pocket, in your hand, or near your face.
I think the extensive eye injuries were because people received the message on their pager and were reading the message and pressing OK.
We received 20% of injuries, which were like in the abdomen because the pager was on the side. We're helping the ophthalmologist, the plastic surgeon who are doing suture over the face. Even the orthopedic had to do a lot of amputation. So we're like kind of giving help, because one orthopedic, even with the whole team of residents, cannot handle the huge number.
As Dr. Sabir said, the challenges were that we are not dealing with one single injury. The patients had injuries in their head, in their eyes, in their face, and in their limbs, the hands mainly. So these were challenging because they were priority, saving their life, saving their hands, saving their head. And we had to work in parallel with other surgeons in order to save also what can be saved from the eyes. And mainly it was devastating for us as doctors, because we had to do many surgeries in the same day, almost 6 separate pure ophthalmo surgery, but in addition to many other surgeries going on, and we had to go to other rooms and try to work also on the eyes. So really, this was very tough for us.
How is the healthcare infrastructure been able to cope with this? Because as human beings, you've been doing one patient after another, but there's only so many people that the hospitals and the whole structure of healthcare in Beirut can handle.
Yeah. In this regard, I would say that the healthcare and the healthcare providers, and especially in Beirut and in the big center, was up to the
excellent
level. And we were coherent. On one patient, can easily find 2 or 3 teams working, one team working for saving a limb, another team working in order to fix a face, and a third team working over the eyes. And this kind of coordination is rare to find. For example, I cannot imagine if such thing happened in another place, it would be easily coordinated, or it would be as good coordinated as it was done.
True, I agree with Dr. Sabir. Despite the tough times we've been through in this country, the economic crisis, people who barely can survive in this country, the medical system showed a great competence in this crisis, as usual. And the hospital where I was working, I think Dr. Sabir agrees with me, were really ready for such disasters.
Let me ask you about what people have said to you. What are your colleagues, your patients, what are people saying about what's happening in Lebanon right now?
Actually, people are scared. People are scared because we don't know till which level these things will reach. And we are fed up from war, actually. We have too many problems to deal already with in this country. So most of the people are scared. I am scared. I have family. I have kids. And I think Dr. Sabir agree with me. But we are still have some faith. And we believe that there might be any kind of hope, but really scaring what is happening.
I completely agree with you, and I would add that we are scared and tired. But
actually, we're tired, yes.
But the only thing that keep us in Lebanon is that we have hope that this is the end, or we are near an end to a better future for our families, for our kids. That's why if we lose this hope, I don't think any of us will stay in Lebanon.
All what you need is to have a leader in this country, a government, a kind of peace to build again our country, because we deserve a better living in this country. Our kids deserve to stay in this country, be raised here, and have a brighter future like many other kids in the whole world. Yani, we don't need to immigrate to give our children a good future.
The only thing I'm afraid of is that if I stay for 20 years, in 20 years my and the situation will stay the same, my son will come to me and say, "Hey, Papa, why did you stay here when you had the chance to leave?"
And, you will answer him because I love this country and I will never give up on it.
I would answer him this way, but I think he will have the right to know.
Exactly. No matter what we say, it's tough on us as doctors, as human being, as Lebanese people. It's really tough.
Doctors Rania and Tufik in Beirut, who despite the hard times, very much continue to have hope. We actually caught up with Dr. Rania a few days ago, and she told us that she and her colleagues have had next to no sleep since then, such is the scale of demand for medical care following the increased exchange of fire. Inevitably, the consequences has also meant hundreds of deaths this week, including some 50 children in Lebanon. On Monday, more than 500 people died in the country. It was the most deadly day there in decades. But as well as the dead and injured, there are tens of thousands of people who've been displaced from their home. For our next conversation, we'll hear from two people contemplating this in southern Lebanon, Zara and someone we're calling Mark.
I saw a lot of bombs, a lot of injuries, a lot of even injured deaths. It was like a war zone. There's some people who got injured. There's some people who got killed. Civilians, people, to be clear.
I didn't dare get out of my house, but I didn't see much. There was a lot of smoke, a lot of gunpowder smell, which is from the strikes. some people I knew were murdered yesterday or injured. They were not related to any groups, to anything. They were just civilians. It was a very difficult day.
What are your plans?
Honestly, I'm just sitting with my family, which they prefer to stay home. So I can't leave them. I'm staying with them.
We're planning to go visit for 2 days with my family to live with some relatives. We're not planning to go for a long time. We're just moving or, you know, going out because of lack of basic needs like food and water right now. And hopefully things will get better in the 2 days and we'll come back. We're not afraid of anything either way.
So you're in southern Lebanon and you'll be going for 2 days to stay where?
We were going to Beirut.
Are you concerned about the fighting even being there?
I mean, we have a strong belief that, like, no matter what happens, if we get murdered by the strikes, it will be a huge honor. And if we stayed, it's a bigger honor too. So we're not afraid of that. We're more concerned about the basic needs and trying to live a great life, like a normal life at least. Because it's our land. It's where we grew up. It's a dignity at the end of the day. It's our dignity to protect. We're not going to flee.
The same.
You must be scared, each of you, though.
Honestly, not really. I was scared only when I was hearing the bombs, but I can see them. I was sitting the whole time on my balcony and watching everything.
I mean, I would be more scared about my little siblings, maybe. But, like, it's what God have planned for us, I guess.
What are you going to have to do when you move to Beirut, Zahra? You said you're going to try and stay there for 2 days and hopefully the fighting will reduce slightly in that time. I mean, have you got a lot of family? Have you got things that you're taking with you? What are your preparations?
Yeah, I'm trying to take like some valuable things like memories with me there, because what if we didn't find a home to come back to? Hopefully things don't really escalate more and I can start my university year, I guess. Not much of a plan there.
Yes. And Mark, as you explained, you're staying put. What plans are you making to try and secure yourself or make sure you can survive where you are?
I'm trying to get as much food as possible to keep everything in check and water and everything. And thankfully we have solar systems, so it's going to help with electricity. It's empty area now, like everyone fled away, so we're almost alone and there is nothing to be worried about.
How used to this kind of thing are you, unfortunately? How much have you lived with and maybe grown up with bombing and fighting around you?
Well, I was like 5 years old back then, but I have a story which I still remember. We're all sitting in our grandma home, all of the family just hiding there. And there was a newborn kittens outside. So me and my sister made some milk and went there to feed them. At this moment, an air strike hit like 800 meters away, 1 kilometer away. So it was really scary. And the rockets were hitting around us. So we just hugged and we were like, okay, we are dead. But then after the fog went down and everything went clear, thankfully, we wasn't even hurt.
Do you have hope that there'll be peace soon?
I don't think so. Like, it's going to end up in, like, some agreement, ceasefire. Things going to be as normal as in this stuff is going to be repeated again and again and again. Like, you can't trust Israel. You see how they're treating people in Gaza. So hopefully, there's some day where hopefully peace. Hopefully.
Mark and Zahra in southern Lebanon. During the week, we also received voice messages from many people in the country. Here's what we got.
Hello. Yeah, so the sounds of bombs and ambulance sirens have become part of our daily existence. Every day brings more grim news and there's a constant state of readiness for evacuation. People are at their breaking point, craving an end to this torment. Lebanese citizens have endured more than enough, and all we want now is the normal, peaceful lives we deserve.
The scenes are horrifying. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people are being moved away from their homes in order to escape the threat of Israeli missiles. And it's going to start bringing additional issues because you're bringing multiple people from multiple different cultural backgrounds and you're now stuffing them in a singular area where they aren't really destined to get along.
The situation is very scary. We're all super anxious. My family and I are planning to evacuate our home in Beirut if things really do escalate in the next couple of days, because we really don't know what's going to happen next. We have our house in the mountain. We are going to get it ready and just stay there until further notice if things do take a wrong turn.
What's happening is horrific. I can't find the words. Personally, I have left my house to a safer area, but I don't know how long this will be safe. There's no time to assess our feelings. We're processing the war. We're mourning the loss of human souls, people we know. These are our friends, family. We're trying to figure out what we can do to help everyone who's displaced and trying to cope with the situation, not knowing what to expect and when will this end and how will this end.
Hida, Lynn, Fadi and Jana with those voice messages. And we're going to hear from the other side of the Lebanese border in Israel in just a moment. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations. I'm Luke Jones. Israel says around 60,000 of its people have been forced to leave their homes in the north of the country as a result of missile strikes from Hezbollah. The Israeli government has said that their goal is to make the area safe so Israelis can return. For our final conversation this week, we've brought together three women who live in the north of Israel. Now, unlike in Lebanon, Israelis get protection from the so-called Iron Dome and other sophisticated missile defence systems. So there have been fewer deaths and injuries in Israel. The dome wasn't in place during the last major conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, what's known as the Second Lebanese War in 2006. Sarah is in the coastal city of Nahariya. Yael and Yasmin are further south in the city of Haifa.
I'm sitting on a balcony so I can see pretty much everything. And the way I think Israelis react is by staying calm. I think it's part like that resilience and part desensitization. Unfortunately, I think we can all agree we've been very, very desensitized. So it's kind of a jarring reaction, I think, for anybody coming from international. They would be very jarred by this reaction because it's almost scary how calm everybody seems, because I feel like some people really, it's so scary for them. But as a whole, people stay very, very calm here, more calm than I've seen in other countries that I've lived in.
Because we're used to it.
Exactly. They desensitize it. Massive desensitization. Absolutely.
Yeah, we had, I remember when I was like in the first grades, every year we had a bomb rehearsal that you need to know if you're in this class, you go over there. And if you're in that class, you go over there. And if you don't have bomb safe room, like you go under the table. And every year they change the protocols. So
yeah, we all had this in public education.
Yeah, it's kind of regular.
Yeah, it's like we don't want to say it's regular, but unfortunately the reality is that it is quite regular, especially for up north.
I was in a Pilates class and I'd just left and I was talking to somebody and the sirens went off and we just noticed that there was a sign towards a safe room and so we just walked there together. There is no point panicking, actually, because you're only going to make things worse. But there's also this helpfulness that people have towards each other here. And I think from my understanding, talking to people who were here in 2006 and there was no Iron Dome and people were quite traumatized, people in Nahariya, including my daughter-in-law who came in 2005.
Are you worried about there being an escalation? And did you see what happened in Beirut and other parts of Lebanon where all these Hezbollah communications devices exploded and the rest? And did you think, I worry what's going to come back the other way now?
As far as I'm concerned, once I read that on the news, I said, that's a declaration of war. I knew that there would be consequences. And as much as I would like to say I feel safe, that might change very, very soon. And I think the biggest shift too is that during the Second Lebanese War, I think people were, of course, very traumatized, but it was just a different kind of feeling. I think people had a lot more hope. Although people do still retain hope, I think there's a massive shift in the atmosphere and the social dynamics.
There are a lot of people that got hurt from this war, I think, like in numbers, like just like dry numbers.
Oh, and how do you...
There's really loud booms right now.
Yeah, I hear them.
Yeah, we all heard that simultaneously, I think.
And Yael, how do you feel hearing that and thinking about what Yasmin said about this feeling like slightly different to what has gone before?
It's always scary, but it's going to be okay because, like, you know, it's always over at some point.
I think we're the people, we're the citizens, we're not the people that are making those decisions that affect us all. I think that's one of the big things. If it's down to us, I'm sure there'd be peace and there'd be open borders with Lebanon, but I don't think anyone's allowing us to rule this way.
I think this is also the value of this conversation is that, you know, I think worldwide people are right now watching Israel very, very intensely. And so often, you know, they hear about the government, like all of these announcements. I don't think they actually hear the people. And it's quite fascinating to open that dialogue between common Israeli citizens, workers, mothers, families, and the international community. Because I think the actual feeling of the people is quite different from what Bibi says.
Sometime around November, I was walking the dog locally and we could hear booms. And there were a group of small children discussing whether that was us firing at them or them firing at us. And, you know, you don't want to hear five-year-olds have that conversation.
Honestly, if there's such to be ground troops and a real, you know, not real, but a more intense ground war would begin here, I wouldn't be so opposed to leaving the country, personally. As somebody who's privileged enough to have another citizenship, I think I would make plans probably to get me and the small amounts of my family that I have here out of Israel. That's a stark kind of shift in, I think, the attitudes of many people. Many of my friends have multiple citizenships and a lot of them are already prepping for what might happen.
I lived in Israel all my life and it's a hard situation to think about. Like, all of my family, all my friends are here. And it's kind of hard to think about a situation when I would have to go somewhere else. I kind of see it, the war, everything. You just go day by day, and that's it. I'm trying not to think what happened, if it will escalate.
Like I said, it's very much a privilege to have multiple citizens. Not only that, but I don't have as much family here. Most of my immediate family is not living in Israel. That is a massive privilege that I could just theoretically take off and leave. I can't even imagine if I was in the shoes of a normal Israeli citizen that has their entire life here, everything, absolutely everything, I might feel differently. And that's totally a privilege. So I really, I fear and I worry for the people who don't have that privilege.
Yasmin, Yael and Sarah in northern Israel. Thank you to them and to all of our guests for sharing their views and experiences. I'm Luke Jones and you've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.